Radio 2, ACB Radio Interactive, will be celebrating its second birthday. This is your official invitation to the party. We're inviting you, the ACB Radio Interactive listener, to record your very own birthday greeting. Send it to us as a high-quality audio file to acbri@acbradio.org. Then stay tuned at the start of September and hear birthday greetings from around the world. ACB Radio Interactive, celebrating our second birthday.
ACB Radio is brought to you by the American Council of the Blind. If you would like more information about the council, visit their website at www.acb.org. That's www.acb.org. ACB, the people that bring you ACB Radio.
Wherever in the world you are, hello, hello, welcome back to Blind Line. This is the original interactive talk show for the blind and vision impaired, discussing the issues that matter to us. Nice to have your company, and we go out to a global audience. It's amazing, sometimes we just get an email. I had one in the last week from someone who listens in South Africa, who I haven't heard from before. You know, we've got listeners everywhere, so when you express an opinion on Blind Line, you just never know where in the world it is going to end up. And on the program today, shortly we'll be hearing somebody different doing an interview, which is always refreshing. Janine Stanley recorded an interview with someone from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and she'll tell us all about that in just a moment. This came from the ACB convention. That goes for about 25 minutes or so, and then we will open the phone lines for your comments. Anything that you would like to discuss, by all means, give us a call. We'll give you the number a little bit later after the interview, but you should be able to see that in the title bar of your player if you're using Winamp, version 2, of course, or Real Player. So without any further ado, let's go and hear from Janine Stanley.
Hello, everyone. This is Janine Stanley, and I'd like to introduce an interview that I did during the ACB National Convention. I'll give you a little background first. This year at the ACB convention, Guide Dog Users Incorporated, GDUI, decided to do something a little bit different and have some very informal roundtable discussions. We had two of these discussions, and our first one involved complaint processes when you encounter discrimination based on your guide dog. And this session actually turned into something much more valuable than what we had expected. Thanks to several volunteers who work with GDUI, we were able to get in touch with Ray Bautista, who is a claims investigator for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC. And Ray, who lives in Houston, was able to come to our roundtable, talk with us, answer a lot of questions. He was also joined by Janine Warden from the Department of Justice Fair Housing Division, and so we had quite a little panel of experts at our roundtable to answer questions. If discrimination in employment and employment-related issues under Title I of the ADA are a vital concern to you, as they really should be for all of us, I think, you may want to pass that along to the ACB National Office and encourage them to court the EEOC officials to come to the Pittsburgh Convention. We were lucky enough to catch Ray Bautista on Tuesday morning of the convention, running between meetings in the exhibit hall, and we have a quick interview for you. We'll be doing some more interviews, I think, as time passes with Ray via the telephone, so the quality will be a little bit better, about recent Supreme Court decisions and what impact they'll have on employment issues for people who are blind and visually impaired, plus anything new that's going on at the EEOC. And now I'll introduce our interview with Ray Bautista.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
Could you tell us a little bit about what is the EEOC? We've heard this acronym bandied about for years now. What is the EEOC and what do you specifically do there?
Thank you. The EEOC is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. We're a federal agency. We enforce or investigate allegations of discrimination at the workplace. And we also enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that's what we'll be talking about today. As far as what I do there, I am a federal investigator. I also have to say that I am totally blind and a guide dog user. My companion is Domino.
Who would qualify for the services of the EEOC? Because there are certain entities that are exempt from your processes, and who would actually qualify if you are employed by whom? Can you go to the EEOC?
Well, we do have certain requirements, but we are a free agency, and everyone can come to us to inquire on work-related that the employer must have a minimum of 15 employees for us to investigate the allegations. By 15 employees, that does not mean 15 employees at that particular site. If the company has other entities or other companies that they're affiliated with, they could be a total of 15 employees among all the companies. And then but we establish the jurisdiction once the individual comes to talk about their issues. We investigate, again, work-related issues, failure to hire, discharge, failure to accommodate. We also have a very user-friendly website. If you'd like, I'd give that out.
Oh, yes, please.
It's www.eeoc.gov.
Many blind people work for state and federal government, various agencies. Does EEOC investigate claims brought against the state and federal government?
We do investigate claims against the state entities, also other government entities such as could be a university, education institution, a public transportation, things of that nature. Unfortunately, we do not litigate, but we can investigate and attempt to resolve the issue if we find a violation. As far as the federal sector, each independent agency has their own EEO office within their agency. However, there's talk about having all federal agencies' complaints handled by the EEOC by trained investigators.
There's been considerable talk over the years, and particularly in the 90s, about how backlogged the EEOC is as far as investigative processes. Can you speak to a little bit about how that process may have changed or be changing, or the efficiency of the EEOC?
Well, as a matter of fact, there have been some changes. Rapid charge processing, our website talks about that. We are under federal mandates to investigate and resolve all complaints within 180 days, which is approximately 6 months. The ideal situation, we would want to take a charge, investigate and resolve it within 180 days. Unfortunately, that is not in all cases. Because we are a neutral fact-finding agency, depends on the response time from the employer, charging party, their evidence, etc. There are some companies that still challenge whenever we request information, and so we have to subpoena the documentation to court. We've been very fortunate that the federal court system has upheld any documentation that we subpoena and have granted us that and above.
I'm sure that makes the process go a lot faster. This may not be a fair question, but do you feel overall that the agency is fairly well staffed to handle the needs, or is that something that we as an organization, ACB, might advocate for?
I guess, you know, we can always say we need more staff, but that would be sounding like a complaint. We do the best that we can. All I can say is we're not a perfect agency, mm-hmm. But since we are under those mandates of 180 days, we are the administrative process. So that is, not all cases are fully investigated as they were years past. So now we objectively look at a case, we may request some documentation and make a cursory review and see and determine if we're going to investigate this case further or if further investigation is not warranted. At that point, we make a recommendation to close the case and the notice of right to sue is issued. This gives the individual an opportunity to pursue legal action if they so choose.
I think that's a great segue, too, into the next question that I have for you. What are our rights? We will start from the very beginning. I am a blind person. I am seeking employment. What are my rights through the interview job search process?
A visual impaired person, just like all sighted people, have the right to any application that they are qualified, a position that they're qualified to apply for, that application must be made available or accessible to the visual impaired person, whether it be on computer. At times, companies can even provide a scribe, or they should provide a scribe, to assist the individual with the application process. Once an individual is applying and an interview is scheduled, it is very important. Unfortunately, most blind people don't know that it is unlawful for an employer to ask any question pertaining to their disability during the interview process. The courts have ruled, and it's very clear, no inquiry can be made about your disability until after an offer of employment is made. And once an offer of employment is made, the question can only be limited to how you would perform the essential functions of that job.
Could you give us some examples of questions that might be illegal regarding asking about your disability?
Oh, absolutely. Common questions that are asked, how much can you see? What caused your blindness? How long have you been blind? Have you ever tripped and fallen? Those questions are unlawful. I think the guidelines state that any question that is going to solicit a response of your disability is unlawful. There's a lot of them. I think we can go on and on mm-hmm. about questions that are asked during an interview. The most important thing that an employer needs to remember is that they should keep in mind only questions about the work. Now, how? For example, it is a good question to ask, or a safe question to ask. This job is going to require you to access the internet for research. Can you explain to me how you would be able to do that function?
And then that person would talk about the technology he or she would use.
Adaptive technology may not cost the employer anything. It can be provided by the state, or in some cases, you know, they have their own equipment that they could bring to work.
On the job itself, once we are hired, what types of complaints do you most often see through your office once a person is actually on the job? What kinds of issues come up?
Well, one thing I'd like to mention before that, if I could, before the issues that have come up, ADA requires that an individual that has a disability request a reasonable accommodation. Quite often individuals assume that because they have a disability, the employer has to give them an accommodation. Well, ADA requires that an individual request a reasonable accommodation.
So this is our responsibility.
Absolutely.
Right?
The other thing that is important to note is that when you're requesting a reasonable accommodation, interaction with the employer, very, very essential. Because quite often, the only individual that knows what they truly need to do the job is the individual with a disability.
So this particular set of regulations is, in fact, putting the power and the responsibility back in our hands.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't understand that. The law does allow for an employer to make an inquiry about accommodation if the individual has a physically visible disability, such as, for example, a visually impaired individual that goes in with sunglasses, a cane, etc. They can ask, would you need, or what type of accommodation would you need to perform these essential functions? But it doesn't mandate the employer to solicit that. It is the responsibility of the individual. Going back to the question you asked about issues that come up with regard to individuals that are visually impaired, some of the issues that we've seen are modification in schedule, and which ADA does allow for modification in schedule. I'll cite an example. An individual who was visually impaired was commuting on the metro, and so they wanted an accommodation in their schedule so that they could ride the metro. Mm-hmm. And a little discussion, that was accommodated. I myself have an accommodation for my guide dog. However, I make up the time. I come in early. I'm not required to. I just think ethically I'm responsible and I want to do the right thing.
That's one of the big questions that we at GDUI receive, how employers can handle break times for guide dogs, extra time to take the dog out, or time to take the dog out when it might be an emergency. That usually is handled, then you're saying, as a reasonable accommodation.
Also, most companies allow individuals a 15-minute break in the morning, 15 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and quite often you can incorporate your break with the relief break for your guide dog.
What about another issue that often comes up for guide dog handlers on the job, and that's lead time, either to get a new guide dog on a much shorter basis to, say, take the dog for vet care, etc. Is that something that comes up in your office? Is something that's really disputed on the job and becomes a big issue for people?
That recently came up in my office. As a matter of fact, I was contacted by headquarters regarding that. I'm one of the type of individuals that I like to get things out in the open and cleared up before I go into something. Headquarters contacted me because another visually impaired person in the EEOC was requesting some administrative time to go get a new guide dog. They were touching base with me as far as how that was handled with me. I did say that I didn't have my guide dog when I came to the agency. However, I inquired in when I needed another dog, and it was discussed at that time, administrative time is granted. Additionally, when I started my employment here at the Houston office, I requested administrative time for route training for my guide dog. I was new to the city, and of course the director granted that at her discretion. And so administrative time is granted, and it worked out fine. And, Domino is one of these dogs that doesn't need a lot of time, learns the route once, however that time is granted. But that would have to depend employer on employer. It's on a individual basis.
It would definitely be a negotiating point, I would think.
Absolutely. And if need be, you know, the individual can always use vacation time if they wanted to. You know, is that a reasonable request, accommodation that they should grant? Perhaps. But also, we as individuals with disabilities have to understand that it's a give and take situation. Mm-hmm. In the ideal world, you know, they would follow the letter of the law to the T. However, you know, we live in the real world, so we have to bend a little bit of flex.
Let's say that someone does have a situation with an employer that they feel is discriminatory or that is just blatantly out of control, and they want to file a complaint or take action. What would the process be if they call you up on the phone and say, Ray, I've got a problem?
Okay. We recommend that they contact the EEOC, and we give them counseling on several different issues. If it's not a employment-related issue, we'll make a referral and refer them somewhere else. But they can always contact us. They can come visit and set up an appointment if they'd like. Talk to an investigator. In our office, they're very good about if they don't, if they're not sure about the ADA, they'll you know, research the information. We don't always take a charge because we give the individual that opportunity. We don't solicit charges. It is their choice. So we can give them counseling. We advise them on the time limit for them to file. They could try to resolve it with their employer. But we are there as a resource, and we explain their rights and their responsibility. Quite often, it's not uncommon for someone to come in just for counseling and some advice as far as what their rights are. And then they'll go back to their employer. If they do not work it out, they will come back and file.
What can we bring to you when we come in and we're ready to file or even come in for advice? What's the most effective thing that we can do if one of these situations begins and escalates?
What we recommend is that they put some thought to what they want to tell us. Bring in a concise timeline, probably a detailed statement of what happened. Because once an individual commits something to writing, they're putting some thought into it, and they're not going to ramble on during an interview. They're going to be focused. These are the issues. This is what helped. Any communication with email, a letter of correspondence where they send something to their human resource department, a response from them, anything of that nature that they could bring in, you know, helps the process. Additionally, one of the things I mentioned last night, the EEOC requires, especially if it's an accommodation issue, it requires the individual to substantiate or verify that he or she has a disability. So that is medical documentation, documentation from a commission from the blind, that you are a consumer of them, something to that effect. And although that might sound funny, and last night when I mentioned it, people did laugh, but it's true because our laws, whenever we enforce or whenever we investigate and we're mandating a company provide a reasonable accommodation, we have to be certain that that individual has a disability that substantially limits a major life activity. Just because someone comes in and says they have a disability, we do not have the power to go and enforce that. But we have to substantiate. Does this individual determine? Does this individual have a disability? Once we substantiate that, then we can mandate the employer to provide the accommodation. Unfortunately, if an individual is not substantially limited in a major life activity, the employer is not mandated to give them an accommodation of any kind. They can, but they're not mandated.
In looking at the whole complaint process, it was brought up last night in our roundtable discussion at GDUI that you folks don't hear a lot of complaints from blind and visually impaired people. Can you speak to that at all?
Only from a few people that I spoke to in personal experience. Quite often, an individual that is visually impaired has met with rejection so many times that they just want to be employed, so they just don't complain. And that is unfortunate because it happens on a regular basis. But unless the individual goes through the process and file a complaint, contact the EEOC, and then file a charge of discrimination, we really wouldn't ever hear about it, and we can't go take corrective action.
So even if they're just calling as an inquiry, that's still hearing from the community.
Yes, but the laws that we enforce require that a charge of discrimination be filed. That's a signed charge. It's almost in an affidavit format. You make some allegations, what they told you, what happened, and then we file it. You sign it. It is notarized that it is a legal document. We serve that to the company, giving them an opportunity to respond.
Let's go back for a minute here to the types of documentation. Email, then, is considered by the EEOC and your experience through the courts to be a legal document that can be used?
In our investigations, we've used emails quite often. You know, individuals have, I'll give you an example, have said, well, I had a conversation with my supervisor, but no one was around. Well, email after the fact. You send them in response to your recommendation or according to our conversation earlier, and you send that, and you will get a response. We use that quite often to document the statements you've made or the allegations.
Because we all know people can say things in email that would shock you.
Absolutely.
You never think they would put them in formal writing.
Right. And that's happened time and time again.
What advice can you give to blind people, as a blind person yourself, as a professional, as a guide dog handler? What advice can you give people who are either seeking employment or who may be underemployed or looking to change careers as far as your rights and conducting yourself with employers?
I said it last night that knowledge is power. Know your rights. Know what is required of you as an individual, and therefore you're empowering yourself. Secondly, make yourself as skilled an individual as possible. Know the adaptive equipment. What is best for you? So that when the situation comes up that you'll be looking at the type of job you're applying for, you can do the job. And that is the most important thing. Third of all, don't react in emotion. Establish that you're a professional individual and that you're seeking employment. It is obvious that we're dealing with stereotypes. Educate your coworkers. Educate the employer on how you can do the job.
Finally, how might we get in touch with the EEOC again and with you also if people have questions or have actual concerns in the Houston area?
Well, we can be accessed online at www.eeoc.gov, G-O-V. My email at the EEOC is my first name, period, and my last name, and then at eeoc.gov. I'll spell that for you.
Yes.
It's Ray, R-A-Y, period, B-A-U-T-I-S-T-A, at E-E-O-C, period, G-O-V. My phone number in the Houston area, 713-209-3336. And if I'm not in, of course, they can leave me a name and phone number, and I will call them back.
Thank you so much, Ray, for being with us and joining us at our first GDUI roundtable.
Thank you. I have one last comment that I'd like to make and just
yes.
share an experience at work. And again, working for the federal government was a new experience for me, being sighted all of my life. Most of my colleagues did not realize what it was like to be around a visually impaired person on a daily basis, much less a guide dog user. So what I have found that be very successful, the first day I sent out an email, explaining the do's and don'ts of my dog, and explaining about the feeding time. And I went by and introduced Domino to everyone, because if anyone had a fear of dogs, I set them at ease and explained the situation. I also wanted to be aware if any of my coworkers had any allergies. In my office, one of my coworkers does. So whenever we're attending a group or committee meeting that we both are on, I will leave Domino in my office and use my cane. I do that because if I wanted to, of course, I could always take Domino. But I think it's to have a good, pleasant working environment. As I said before, we basically solved a lot of the problems.
Well, we will keep that in mind, and certainly I'm sure we may be calling on you again from time to time to talk to us about our rights in the workplace and the work of the EEOC. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, this has been Janine Stanley, and that was our interview during the ACB National Convention with Ray Bautista from the EEOC. If you're interested in having officials from the EEOC attend the ACB National Convention in Pittsburgh, please let the national office and appropriate committee chairs know. That way we can make the vital connection between ACB members in the real world and people in the federal government who enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act. For ACB Radio, this has been Janine Stanley.
Very good, and no doubt you will continue to be Janine Stanley in the future. I certainly hope so anyway. Thank you for that, Janine. Most interesting. And the phones are open now. We're all ready to rock and roll on the telephonic apparatus. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. Area code 212-812-2800. And courtesy of spiderphone.com, when you are asked for a conference code, you should enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512, using a brand new long-distance carrier today, too. So anything could happen, and probably will. So you may have some issues that arise for you as a result of that interview. It's great, isn't it, that laws around the world protect us from discrimination, at least in principle. Jolly difficult to prove sometimes, isn't it? We didn't get legislation protecting people with disabilities against discrimination in this country until 1993, so that was after the ADA. We did a lot of things earlier and quite a few things later as well, and that was one of the things that we did later here in this country. And I was reminded, just while I'm waiting for you to call, I was reminded of a story listening to that that happened to me when I was quite young, still in my teens, and saw an ad. Well, it was pointed out to me, an ad in the paper about a broadcasting course. And I sent an audition tape in for this broadcasting course. And they sent me a letter saying, your audition tape got an A+. It was an amazing audition tape. We really want you to do the course, and it's going to cost, I think it was like maybe $1,100 or something quite large for someone who didn't have any money at the time. So I thought, forget this. And I rang them up and said, look, thanks, but no thanks, it's too expensive. And they said, look, we think you would be so good for our course. We're sure you're going to go somewhere in radio that we would like you to do the course, so we'll offer it to you for half price, because we really want you to be on the course. And so I said, well, that's fine. Okie dokie. I will come along the night before and put a few braille labels on things and we'll get going. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm a blind person. I work with Braille, so I'll come in and put some Braille labels on. And he said, oh, there's no point in you doing the course because a blind person couldn't possibly work in radio. And so we had a bit of a talk about that. But and then he grudgingly said, oh, yeah, I guess we'll let you do the course, by which time I said, no, look, don't worry about it, you know, if you're going to be like that. But you see, at least I knew then. Now, although we do have this anti-discrimination legislation, you're always left wondering, did I really get the job because I wasn't good enough, they had a better candidate, or did I miss out on the job because maybe there was a question that they felt nervous about asking in case they got hit with some sort of lawsuit over discrimination? Maybe they felt a bit impeded in terms of asking the questions that they wanted answered. And I wondered whether it's a two-edged sword, the legislation that we now have. Has it made people so careful about the questions that they ask that, in fact, it's doing us some damage? I've got no way of proving that. I'm just sort of putting forward a hypothesis. And you may well feel, well, no, the legislation that we now have that prevents discrimination is working really well, and it's a fantastic breakthrough, and it's all very good progress that we are making. But I do wonder, especially when I heard Ray from the EEOC in Janine's interview talking about how you can't ask questions about the disability. You can ask about how it affects a job, which I guess is fine. But, you know, if you get an HR person, a human resource person, who's going to brief the potential employer and says, look, whatever you do, don't ask how long they've been blind or anything like that, because otherwise you could end up in a real horrible situation, it puts people on edge. What's actually wrong with asking how long have you been blind, or what was the cause of your blindness actually? And what is wrong with it? But I guess maybe we potentially could have gone from one extreme to another, but I'd also be interested in people's views on how well it works. Have you ever, if you're listening from outside of the US, it may not necessarily be the EEOC, but have you used the organization with statutory responsibility for protecting your rights to equal employment? Have you ever used them? Have you tried to? And if so, what's the verdict? Did you get a good hearing? Was the process speedy? And most importantly of all, did you get the resolution that you were after? Was it all resolved to your satisfaction? Be most interested in hearing from you on those points. If you want to talk about law and the employment market and all of those good things, would welcome your call, because the board is free right now. Area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And the conference code, courtesy of Spiderphone, is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. Other things that you might want to talk about? Well, of course, WinAMP3 has been out for about 10 days now. I have to tell you that I have written on a couple of occasions now to different people at Nullsoft. I'm about to try and bypass Nullsoft altogether and see if we can see if us don't get an answer, which is extremely unprofessional. Normally, if you ask somebody for a media interview, they generally come back and say, look, I'm sorry, I'm going to decline, and they don't necessarily have to give a reason, and that's all very fine. But in this case, I'm getting absolutely zilch. No answer. Nothing. I understand some blind people have been written to say, yes, we know it's a problem, and it's a priority for us to try and get it fixed, and sorry for the inconvenience, but stick with WinAMP2 at the moment. But it does raise questions. This is the second situation in recent times where we've had media players that were quite accessible being upgraded to a more inaccessible version. So we're not making as much progress as we thought we were. It might. Seldom happens. I guess who knows what will happen when we see the public beta of Windows Media Player 9, which will come out on about the 4th of September. But it doesn't seem to happen with Microsoft as much as it once did. In fact, most new Microsoft products do tend to be more accessible than they were before. They do seem to have the message. But then you have these situations where you're absolutely flummoxed by how they had it so right with the current version, and then they come out with this new version, and it's the pits, and you think, what is driving them? Do they just not give it consideration? Oh, we never thought of that. I guess that's what must happen. I don't think that anybody goes out and says, we are going to go about making an inaccessible product here. I don't think they go deliberately breaking it. They just don't think. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because certainly it's been no secret that the blind community is a big user of WinAMP, and they've known that. And yet we are wrestling with this inaccessible program. Not very good. So if you've got any comments on what we should do about that, what should we do about that? Do we need to have software coming under the ADA? Now you see, if this was like a spreadsheet application or a word processor or a power business tool, then you could have 508 kick in, Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act in the US. And you could say, government isn't going to buy Winamp. But of course, the government doesn't use Winamp anyway. Well, I mean, you know, and it's free. It's free. So what can you do? My cell phone's going to ring in a moment. That's a very exciting development, isn't it? I guess I should have had it turned off. Look at that. Off it goes. It's exciting. Well, I won't answer that, though. They'll just have to wait. Mind you, we might answer it because there's not a lot happening around here. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. It's area code 212-812-2800. And the conference code is 0480-5512. I shall play a bit of music since we are completely and utterly bereft of callers at the moment. And, you know, meditate on life. So let me just get that organized. And a reminder that tomorrow the snowman is on with John Wiedlich, and they will be talking about this and that. So join them for that at this time tomorrow night. Let's hear from Dave Edmonds now. CB Radio Mainstream and Dave Edmonds on Blind Line, and I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. Well, as we do this live, it is 22 minutes to 2 and the phones are open if you'd like to give us a call. The number's area code 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800, and the number is 0480-5512 to get in. That's the conference code, 0480-5512. You are a quiet lot today, and there are quite a few of you out there as well. Well, monologue. How about this then? Things that we do that are really exciting to blind, to sight of people, that are as boring as heck to blind people. Example, when I was a kid, I used to get taken shopping after school every Tuesday. It used to drive me nuts because actually I didn't have a lot of input. This big supermarket. And it's not as if you could glance at the shelves. And, of course, if you put your hands up to find out what you would buy, you'd inevitably knock things down all over the place and you'd get told off for touching. So you just wander around in this mindless, great big wander around the supermarket, occasionally lobbying for something really yummy that you felt like, and maybe you'd got it and maybe you didn't. Shopping. Very, very boring. I'll tell you something else that was really interesting yesterday in a kind of boring way. And it wasn't entirely boring, but I went to a ballet recital. Yes, because my little girl was in it for a bit. They were doing this kind of... They're all studying for this exam. Heidi's doing her Royal Academy of Dance exam. Pre-primary, I think they call it. And so the different children of all the different grades did a little bit. So we had to sit through lots of other pieces. There was probably about 10 minutes of Heidi and her group and about an hour and 50 minutes of other groups. So even though I couldn't really see, well, I couldn't, not nothing about it, I couldn't see what was going on, I was pleased to know that Heidi was up there doing her thing and that she was really grateful that I was out there for her being there. So I enjoyed that bit. But then when you don't have an interest, as it were, in being there, ballet recitals of that kind are quite challenging for blind parents to sit through, I feel. It's not something like The Nutcracker, which I am going to at the end of the year, because she's in that too. And there's, of course, that lovely Tchaikovsky musical, the, you know, the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies and the Waltz of the Flowers and all those other wonderful pieces. But these are just kind of little nondescript, almost like sweepers. You know, if they were played on a synthesizer, you could even potentially use them for little jingles. These tiny 30 to 45 second beds played by this pianist called Mrs. Hastings. And the instructor would say, "Thank you, Mrs. Hastings." And Mrs. Hastings would play the little piece, and then you'd clap. And obviously you were clapping because the dancers had done something really very cool. But I didn't have an absolute clue what it was. So you'd sit there, and you'd get this 45-second piece of tinkly music, and then you'd clap. And then you'd get another 45-second piece of tinkly music, and so on for 2 hours. So I must confess, I brought my Braille note along and read some of my board papers. Obviously not during the Heidi bit. But you see, there are some things that we get put through which are really interesting for most people that are actually quite difficult to suffer through, don't you think? Maybe you've got some that you can add to the list. I suppose some people could say, well, you know, walking through the shops isn't so bad. There's all these yummy smells and things. I think it's dull. Unless you're going out there with a mission, I do not like walking through the shops. So, maybe there's something on your mind, because I can't tell you. It's been a very long time since we've had so many listeners who have absolutely nothing to say. It doesn't make for a very good talk show, folks. Get on the phone and say anything. Anything at all. You know, I mean, this is your show. Area code 21281228800. I'll say it slowly. Area code 21281228800. And, yes, hello.
Hello, we were just wondering if you wanted to hear the baby's heartbeat over the telephone.
Oh, yes, please. Hang on then. We'll just get the microphone close to the...
Okay, hang on a second. I've got to get the telephone over the other side of the room.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. It's going to be broadcast to the world.
Look, this is very exciting. Now, what's actually happening here, folks?
We're just getting ready here.
Okay. Amanda is this is with all the no calls. So Amanda is seeing the midwife at the moment. Listen to that.
Just finding the right spot. Need to move a little bit. We had it just a second ago.
I see.
Sounds like a train. Doesn't want to perform for the world. noted in a slightly different direction. We're just finding it again.
Well, we're finding the baby here. If you've just, what we're doing is Amanda's seeing the midwife at the moment while I've been on Blindline, and just trying to get...
You just keep talking and I'll put it up to the microphone as soon as we hear it.
Okay, then. And we're just, apparently they've heard baby Mosin's heartbeat for the first time this particular session. And we were just trying to broadcast it here on Blindline, but they've lost it now because the baby's floated away.
Here you go.
Listen. Yeah, that was exceptional. Man.
That was me.
That was exceptionally loud.
I'll put it a little further from the mouthpiece. Hang on.
You can almost hear it saying, "Help me, Sparky, help."
Can you hear it?
I can definitely hear that. Yeah, very cool.
There you go. So the whole world has now heard our baby.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and it's recorded for posterity.
It is. Let's hope.
Okay.
Well, say hi to June for me.
I'll say hi to June for you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. You see, you heard it live and exactly the first time that I did. That is pretty amazing, isn't it? There is nothing like that. Nothing like that. Hearing your baby talk for the first time. I mean, not talk. Hearing the heartbeat like that. That is just so absolutely groovy. It gets me every time. I'm going to be on a high for the rest of the day now. That is just awesome. Ah, hello, area code 559.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm just fantastic.
Yeah, so I heard. And yeah, it's interesting that you can do that today. You know, my daughter, while she was pregnant, they had this machine that you could do that same thing. They brought it over the house, and they chased the baby all over my poor daughter's tummy to try to hear it, because what we don't know is that the baby's in there saying, "Get that damn thing away
from
me."
Yeah, it's just so fantastic, though. I mean, to hear that, and you know that there's this living thing that you've made that's growing and got a little heart that's beating, absolutely fantastic.
Yes, and then they become 2.5 weeks old, and they won't go to sleep when you want them to, and the honeymoon is over.
Is she having that problem?
Oh, yes.
Oh, dear.
But she's taking it all in good stride, I'm happy to say, and you know, it's just kind of, well, that's what they get with the baby, and they're, and she says, "Well, what are you?" She was on the phone with me earlier today, and she says, "What are you looking at, Emily?" And she goes, "I guess you're looking at whatever 2.5 week old look at."
It's so, you know, being a parent for the first time, you feel everything's so new and you're under so much pressure and it's all so strange and your life's upturned, and because you haven't had enough sleep anyway, everything seems so, oh gosh, I never want to go through that again.
Well, you don't have to go through it. The first time is unfortunately, that's there is only one first time.
Yes.
As you know. And,
yes.
And, it's quite something, but all in all, I'm very glad to see that both parents, you know, my daughter and son-in-law, are both real troopers, and they're doing well, and I'm impressed. But
yeah.
Anyway, that hearing the heartbeat on the machine, that was we heard that too. Obviously months ago now, but before we even could tell that my daughter was pregnant, you could pretty much hear it.
Yeah, it's groovy, isn't it? And, of course, the other thing about first-time parents is that most of them tend to wake up about 100 times a night to go and check that the baby's breathing and the slightest little noise and, you know, oh, goodness.
More like 105, John. More like Jonathan, more like 105. But, yes, they do.
Yeah.
And we did. And I still remember the first time, and she's probably 4 or 5 weeks old, that my daughter, now her own and now herself a mother, with the first time she slept through the night, and I remember we both woke up in just the middle of the night. where's the baby? What's wrong? We both bolted out of bed, ran into the room, and there's Jenny just sleeping as quietly as she please. Oh, what are you, you know, what's bugging you?
Oblivious.
Oblivious. Just
yes.
Didn't care one hour or the other. What was interesting is I had an old guide dog at the time. She was an old German Shepherd. She was like 10 years old. And she was just the baby's second mother. And if we wouldn't wake up right when the baby yelled, boy, the dog would come in and poke her nose at both of us and say, get up, you turkeys. Get in there and see what's going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought we'd say hello to the world. Looked like you're having a real bull session tonight. No phone calls at all.
No one loves me.
No one loves you. Well, no. Maybe you should go eat worms.
That's a good song. That's a good song, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's especially if you're like three.
Yeah, I haven't heard that song for a very long time.
I'm interested in some of your discussion last week on the free post and in the U.S. of course we call it the franking privilege.
Yes.
And I guess you'd have to say I'm kind of bi on that one. I go both ways. I certainly think we need it for books that come from the library and what have you, and braille tape, whatever they might be. But I really question, in all seriousness, whether or not people should send their personal mail from one to the other in that form. I certainly never do. I just put stamps on everything, and I figure it's probably more appropriately treated that way anyway, but I kind of think it's like everything else. We tend to overuse it, and this is why people want to take it away.
Yeah, we have somebody here who's suggesting that it should be that if blind people want to send personal mail, that they should do that for the cost that it costs everybody else to send a regular letter, so that if it costs more to post a cassette, then you get that bit written off, but you still pay the regular letter postage rate.
Oh, that sounds like a pretty good idea. I've never really thought about that, but that would be okay.
I suppose that once you have one of these concessions, though, you want to cling on to it for dear life.
You do, and I think there are, you know, I think we, you know, what I think we all fail to realize, and maybe, is our needs do change. I happen to think that part of the reason that it would be a good thing to have some kind of concession, and not necessarily in the mail, as I look down the road, and I look 10, 15, 20 years down the road, I see public transportation sources very much dwindling, and I see that we will have some kind of a need to get around that's going to have to be addressed in some way.
You've got a real thing about public transport. I think it comes from living in California.
It probably does.
Yeah.
But you know what? California, where it goes, California, time goes on.
I can't see Washington getting rid of the metro or New York getting rid of the subway.
No, but if you try to get to from point A to point B somewhere in between Washington or Philadelphia the inner city, forget it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're fine if you're living right in the main city. But by the way, talk about cities. I guess Pam told you I had a nice chat with an airport employee there in Wanganui. It's probably the only airport employee. Says he's
taken out
the plane a bunch of times.
There's more than one airport. I know the guy you mean, though. I hope he was very complimentary.
Well, actually, the things that he said, I don't think we can say on the air. No, seriously, he was quite complimentary. But I thought, well, with those little beach 1900s in Fairchild with what, 19 seats, I figured maybe they really only needed one employee at the airport.
I think they have about three. It's a really little airport, and those planes are disgusting. They're noisy as anything, too.
Well, if they'd use the Beach 1900, I told him. He said they were going to switch from the metros to the 1900, and that would be a much nicer airplane. Same configuration, 19 seats, but the Beechcraft, which is actually a maker of private airplanes, makes it, it's a very nice little airplane, and it's reasonably quiet, and it's, the Metro is horrible though.
Oh, they're noisy, real noisy, and you put your back against the seat and it's vibrating right through you.
Well, that's what you get for living in Wanganui, John. You should have stayed in Wellington.
Well, we like it apart from that. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Of course you do. Anyway. Well, do they have a bus that goes from Wanganui to Wellington?
It takes about 35 minutes by plane and about 2.5 hours by car.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And with you driving, how long does it take?
Well, even quicker than that. Now, you'll be pleased to know they're queuing up to talk now.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, it's because they were trying to bore everybody to death.
Take care,
Jonathan.
Thanks,
all
Dave.
All the best to the new baby.
Lovely. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye now. And we did have Nick on the line before, but he's given up, so we can't talk to Nick now. So, Nick, if you're listening, call back. Do not be afraid. We were just about to come to you. But I think this is Richard instead. Hello, Richard.
Hello, sir. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm great.
And, yeah, you know, I was just wondering when I was making the phone call what exactly you were playing, because I guess I had the computer turned down, so I wouldn't, whatever. So I wasn't quite sure until you were talking in there exactly what I was listening to, because I thought it was very bizarre. I said, what is he playing?
Yeah. It is amazing. Well, that was quite unexpected. Amanda just rang up with a live broadcast of the first listening of the baby's heartbeat.
That was very interesting, because I was trying to figure out, I said, what is this? It must be something important, but I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yes, a transmission from the new millennium.
Yes. Yeah, and in more ways than one, I guess.
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, you know, as far as your comments, as far as not very interesting to blind people, how about going through a wax museum?
Wow, that's interesting you say that, because I went through the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in London, and I actually got to get a really good impression of what some pretty famous people looked like, because they let me examine the wax models by hand.
Yeah. Oh, well, the particular wax museum I went to, this was a long time ago. This was like when it was in my 20s or whatever. We couldn't touch anything. Actually, it was quite funny. There was actually a wax display of a pretzel maker. Pretzel man. And when someone went up to try and touch the pretzel, I guess it must have been an infrared or something like that, and you get this recording saying, please don't touch
them. How cool. Well, this was about, when was I there? About 13 years ago. And the only one that they wouldn't let me look at, so to speak, that I was really, really interested in was the one of Princess Diana. I was bitterly disappointed about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Probably the time when they were making it, probably.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But
The only thing, though, that I take it is a real hot topic lately, it seems like, on the PC audio list is Winamp 3. But I'm also kind of curious as to what the heck happened to Real 1. It just seemed like you had them on. They seemed very nice. They seemed like they were going to fix the problem with the Real 1 player, and then we haven't heard diddly.
Well, patience is a virtue, and they didn't say when they were going to do it, and I understand they're still working on it. In fact, if you get the news notes from ACB's national office, you'll see that they actually have just written to ACB to indicate that they are nearly ready to release their accessible version.
Of Real 1?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, it shouldn't be far away now.
Yeah, well, that's good, because it just seemed like I was just kind of curious as to, you know, what happened. I mean, I know I said that they seemed very willing, and they seemed that they were working on it, but it just seemed like you didn't hear any, you know. It just seemed like, all right. Okay, folks, so when is it happening?
Yeah, well, it sometimes these things do take a while, and I guess to integrate MS Active Accessibility into a product is a bit of a large technical challenge to do it right.
Yeah.
Now, what's your verdict on JAWS version 4.5? Because I know that you are very conservative when it comes to new software.
Myself?
Yeah.
Yes and no. It depends. Sometimes I will try something new, and sometimes I won't. It depends on how I figure I'm going to wait for that to actually come out this time around.
Okay.
Because I didn't have too much success with the beta the last time, so I had problems. So I figured, well, let me wait this time.
All right. Well, they've come out with the second public beta now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I personally think it's very, very groovy the way they've added all those quick navigation keys.
Yeah, that is kind of nice, and it seems like it's... because I always found that the heading features, it never really quite... Well, it did work, but usually when you go to a page, it would say heading 1, and then heading... And then you jump to heading 5, and you wonder, well, what happened to 2, 3, and... 2, 3, and 4. So I never thought that the headings feature didn't really impress me all that much. But I think it was not so much JAWS, but I think it was just the way the pages have people actually not really using that feature all that much. I didn't find that much use for the headings feature, but the navigation keys. In a sense, it does make sense because you're not using the keyboard, so you might as well take advantage of it if you're reading. So that does make sense.
Well, the heading feature, just because there's a heading 1, it doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a heading 2, 3, or 4, because they are heading levels in terms of the size of the print and the italics and the bolding. So you can quite often have somebody who puts a big heading at the top of the page as heading level 1, but then wants a subheading in quite small print, they might use heading level 3, 4, or 5.
I always found that a little strange, though, when you hear that, though.
Well, I guess that's just something you get used to. I mean, we do that on websites that we design all the time, because heading level 2 is too big, you see, so you wouldn't want to go from heading level 1 straight to a heading level 2, necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, and congratulations with your new... little one on the way.
Oh, thank you. It's going to be a wee while yet, not due till the end of February, so we've got a long, long summer to go through first.
That's right. That's winter for us here, but yes, then you'll be getting into the hot... Yeah, that was never fun. My sister-in-law, she had my nephew in actually was this at the end of this month is his birthday. And that was not pleasant. The hot having a child in the hot months is not a pleasant thing.
No, it's not. And we will have to try and come up with coping strategies.
Yeah, and trying to keep comfortable and cool, because it's, the other problem is that my sister-in-law, she had very bad allergies. So between the pregnancy and the heat and her allergies, it was a little rough.
Oh man, I'll bet. I have immense respect and sympathy for anyone who's pregnant.
Yeah, it's pretty rough all.
Alrighty, well, we'll talk with you next time.
Yeah, you take care, John.
Yep, thanks, Richard.
Take care.
Bye now. And we've got another call who's waiting. Let's go to it. Hi, this is Blindline.
Oh, good evening, Jonathan.
Hi there.
I'm calling from Albany, New York.
Ah, you came through blocked this time.
Where is it about? It's about 86 degrees here.
Oh, very good.
Just thought you'd be jealous.
Is that hot? Or I don't know what 86 degrees really is. I mean, because we don't use that. We use Celsius.
Oh, that's right. You use all. That's right. I'd have to convert it. Oh, yeah. Well. Very interesting. And congratulations on your new edition.
Thank you.
And heard the little one over the air. That was pretty interesting.
It's been amazing.
Happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And we just got our computer upgraded yesterday, as a matter of fact, to a Pentium 4, and found out that the version of Winamp didn't work.
Yeah, it's a pain, isn't it?
I guess. I couldn't believe that. I said, but you know what happens, Jonathan? When we go into ACB radio and you hit sign up for or listen to it on Winamp, it goes over to Real One.
Okay. That will be because Real One is taking control of that particular file extension. It'll be trying to... Real One has obviously been assigned to the PLS file extension. And it's quite difficult to stop it from doing that because at the moment the preferences in Real One aren't very accessible in the file type definition area where you can tell Real One what file types to handle and which types to leave alone. And that's part of the accessibility issues that they intend to fix in the accessible version that's coming out one day.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we know. Excuse me. Yeah, we got the... ACB newsletter the other day, and they said that they were going to be coming out with that. Now, they've also visually changed the website around. In fact, one of the reasons why we signed up for the Gold Pass version was to get the old-time radio.
Yes.
And because Yahoo is no longer offering any streaming, they were providing the service for real for the old-time radio. It is no longer up there.
Is that right?
That's correct.
So you mean it's still on Real One, but it's not on Yahoo?
It's not even on Real One. There's no choice for all-time radio up there anymore.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, because I had a, what do they call that, a gold pass or whatever, and I let it lapse.
Yeah,
I let it lapse after a while. I just cancelled it because I didn't have time to listen to everything. But, yeah, it's amazing because at one point, Broadcast.com, which was formerly... the former name for Yahoo Broadcast, I mean, they were it. That was where you would generally go for pretty much all of your streaming content at one time, and now it looks like Yahoo's getting right out of the streaming business.
Yeah, I'll be getting it tomorrow. Is a book with a listing of all the radio stations, their owners, and the frequencies, and the websites that they're on. And it's supposed to be about 900 pages. And it's going to be interesting to see how many, and also the owners of the stations, too, who owns them. And over here, a lot of the stations are owned by Clear Channel.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were broadcast through Yahoo. So a lot of the radio stations aren't even being broadcast over, in addition to the, you know, the copyright laws and everything else that's going on.
Well, there is a piece of legislation that is hopefully going through Congress, which... I think it's called the Internet Radio Fairness Act or something of that kind. And you can go to saveinternetradio.org to find out more about it. And for people in the US, there's a form there that you can fax a message to your congressperson. But it really is important that everybody does that because the CARP proposal, while there's nothing wrong with compensating people for their intellectual property, what's been proposed is just ridiculously skewed. In favour of the record labels and away from particularly lower budget independent broadcasters.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous, and it's too bad that, you know, that it had to happen. But hopefully you'll start seeing stuff coming back. And I just got yelled at from downstairs saying that Clear Channel owns 1,200 channels.
Yeah. I read an article about them about a week ago, and it sounds like there's a view in the U.S. that they really are taking the heart and soul out of radio over there.
Oh, it's, they've monopolized. You talk about a monopoly, they monopolize everything.
Bad news. Well, I appreciate you phoning in, and let's hope we continue to have lots of good streaming media to listen to.
Yes, I hope so, too, and I hope they're able to fix the Winamp. When did they update that?
A Friday week ago, about 10 days ago.
Oh, okay.
In the meantime...
Yeah, that's interesting. You said you tried to call them and you didn't get an answer?
I've been emailing a few contacts I have there, and they just don't reply. So we're going to go through the AOL media people.
Maybe they know that, and that's why they're not answering.
No, I'm sure. But we'll go through the AOL media people and see what we can do. But in the meantime, you can still get Winamp 2.8 from the ACB radio site, and that's a good option.
But anyway, well, we still hear you anyway. We got you on loud and clear.
Good on you.
Alrighty.
Thanks for that. Okay, bye now.
All right, bye now.
There you go. Nicholas.
Yes.
What's happening?
How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm very well, actually.
Yeah, I went to look at Winamp 3. And
yes.
I was excited about that release. I thought it was going to be good. I thought it was going to have some impact.
Wow.
And I'm disappointed.
I can tell.
I'm extremely disappointed with NELSA.
Yep.
Those guys are not corporate guys. They don't even care about what we have to say. They don't.
Well, I suppose that that's probably right. I mean, in the end, we are a very small fragment of their total market. And maybe they just decided they're going to get it out there and work on the accessibility later.
Well, somebody is going to have to write a skin. That'll work well with JAWS or Window Eyes.
I think a skin's partially it, but also because of the architecture, this WASABI system, it would actually be possible if someone chooses to write a completely accessible player using that architecture. It could
That's
actually
what I was getting at.
Yeah, well, it's more than a skin. It's a it's a major bit of programming to use all those different components. But if it was done right, it'd actually be heaps better than Winamp 2. The question is, I guess the person who does that and puts the hours and hours and hours that it will take will probably want to sell it to us, not give it away.
Well, considering how popular Winamp 2 was in the blind community, that might not be so.
I agree. I mean, it was very popular, and so if I had the ability to do that kind of programming, I would be working on it right now and selling it for about $15 a piece, and I'd be making lots and lots of dollars.
Oh man.
Yeah.
But the question is, and it doesn't say here, does Winamp 3 actually make MP3s sound better?
Well, you can actually. I mean, you can play stuff with Winamp 3. I've been using it to play ACB radio streams, and you know, you can use the NQ function to queue up a whole lot of songs in it. I don't think it sounds any better.
So then what's the real? It's all visuals here.
I think it actually is.
But we lost the SQR crossfader.
Well, that's right.
I think sounds just like a radio station.
But there is crossfading built right into the player in Winamp 3, though.
But yet that crossfader, I got a sneak peek at that in Winamp 2. Somehow I found an Olsoft crossfader plugin. So I got a sneak peek at that, and it's nowhere near.
Oh no! But that's a very, very old plugin, that Nullsoft crossfader. This is a completely new crossfading engine in Winamp 3. It's different from the Winamp 2 Nullsoft crossfading output plugin, which was rubbish compared with SQR. The engine that's in version 3 is actually rather nice. But I haven't found an accessible way of turning it on. I mean, and there's the rub. We've got a difficult player on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, the main reason I called was to ask you a question.
Oh, good.
This has been at me for, like, a long time.
Oh, man, you shouldn't let these things...
And you sometimes play every Monday.
You shouldn't let it trouble you like that.
Yeah. But it's this, and I have it going in the background. I had recorded a little sample, and what is that? I like that.
It's breaking up.
It's breaking up?
Oh, now you confuse me. You confuse me, you see, because you were talking about Monday, but actually you're talking about Tuesday UTC, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that is a piece of music off... an album called What's the Fuss by Pascal's Triangle, which we play on the cafe. And I can't tell you what that piece of music's called off the top of my head, but the whole album's very groovy indeed. And that's a good bit of music. That's our Tuesday music when I'm operating for John.
Oh, I love that thing. I like that.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah, it is good.
Whoever did that did a nice little song.
Yeah, that was Pascal's Triangle. The group is called.
And I guess it's a blind person who did it. If it's played on the cafe.
Yeah, the guy is. I'm not sure whether his wife is blind, but I'm pretty sure the guy is blind, and he's got a wife and daughter and son. The son is called Pascal, and I don't know whether he was a programmer or what, but. But yeah, that's what they are, and they've got some great stuff on their album.
Mm.
Yes.
Pascal, right?
I think so. Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. It is really. And are you still on vacation?
I'm still on summer vacation. You got it.
Man, this seems to have been going on forever now.
Well, the Helen Keller camp for the blind has just ended, so that basically tells me it won't be long now.
And so you went to that, did you?
Yeah, I went to that.
And they all said, oh man, we've heard you on ACB radio.
Some people do, yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, and did you bring your stylus so you could do Braille autographs and stuff?
No.
Oh man, you gotta be a bit entrepreneurial. You could have sold them. This is the American way we're talking here.
I wouldn't have done that anyway.
Oh man. Well, it's very nice to hear from you, and
I just heard my web browser click, which means you got another call on the board.
You are very right. That's very observant of you. But I
got another one.
Yeah, I found it now. It looks like it's the highly excellent Michael Killian, if I'm not mistaken.
Ah.
So
that'd
should
be interesting.
I shall go and talk with him, and I wish you a pleasant week. And have you written to Nullsoft to voice your objections to Winamp 3?
I will do that.
You do that.
Winamp's always been an excellent player. Winamp should not. Winamp should really not go the way it's gone. It's just think of the blind.
That's right, especially when it's an AOL product. I mean, Winamp Nullsoft is owned by AOL, you know. And
yeah.
You would think that AOL would have known better after what the NFB tried to do to them.
Yeah, and, Nullsoft is an AOL product, but Nullsoft isn't really doing what AOL says. Nullsoft is basically just going where they're going. So
well,
NFB
I don't know.
No,
I don't think that's quite true. They've got a strategy, which is to kind of, the whole Spinner brand is being, well, gosh, everybody's ringing in now. I'm going to have to go and take all these calls.
Okay, see you later.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Man. The American way, you should be selling autographs. Hello, area code 615.
Hello there, Mr. JM.
How many autographs have you signed today?
Oh, I would say maybe minus 50.
Oh, good on you. So what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, you were talking about not really knowing how hot 86 degrees was.
Yep.
That would be 30 degrees Celsius.
Oh, that is getting warm. That's one thing
yes,
I miss.
It is getting up there.
Yeah, that's one thing I miss about the. One thing I wish that the Braille light did that the Braille note. Sorry, let me try again. One thing I wish that the Braille note did that the Braille light does is it's got all sorts of cool conversion utilities in the Braille light where you can convert Fahrenheit to centigrade and all sorts of metrics to imperial and all sorts of good stuff.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We got those equations put in several years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 35 degrees Celsius would be 95 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot.
That is hot. And sometimes it even can get to like 100 and something degrees in July in the U.S.
Oh. And thank goodness we haven't hit 100 around here. In fact, our highest has been 97. Which would be 36 point something.
Oh, man.
Celsius. 37 degrees Celsius, by the way, is 98.6 Fahrenheit normal body temperature.
Yeah, that's really gross. I mean, that's just so incredibly hot. I find, because in Whanganui, where I am, they did a survey and they came up with the fact that it's, I think it's the third or fourth most temperate climate in the world. That is, it never gets overly hot and it doesn't get overly cold. And when I go to the US in the summer, you know, for the ACB conventions, and somebody says to me, let's go down the road and get a sub, you know, so I think, oh, this sounds very like American fun. So I walk out of the hotel and you're like, it's almost like you're going to be bowled over by this amazing wall of heat, and I'm just not used to it. I can't cope.
Yeah. I think probably one of the places I would like to live would be Hawaii. Now, there is a temperate climate.
It's lovely there. I mean, I'm not much of a sun, sand, and sea person, but I did spend some time in Hawaii convalescing some years ago, and it was really fantastic. Gosh, it's lovely there.
Yeah, my parents, well, actually, my father and stepmother went several weeks ago by plane to Tahiti, which I was told is on the same longitude as Hawaii.
Yeah.
3,000 miles to the south, but on the same longitude.
Glorious.
In the summertime, that would be 5 hours behind me. So right now, it is 9:18 p.m., so in Hawaii and Tahiti, it would be 4:18 p.m.
That's right. They are 22 hours behind New Zealand. It's amazing.
It is incredible.
Yeah, and it gets even worse. I think it's like, I think they're exactly 24 hours behind when we go to summertime and you guys go to wintertime.
Yeah, well, Hawaii does not go on daylight time.
Okay, so it would probably be about 23 hours then, yeah. Well, hey, I don't know what you said, but they're all lined up here, so I'm going to go and deal with the queue now.
It's about things that would be interesting for sad people but boring for blind people.
Yep.
How about tennis? Watching tennis on TV.
Yeah, it is interesting when you get the radio commentary, isn't it? But, you see, I don't mind that. I don't mind, because at least you get the umpire calling the score, you know, pretty regularly.
Yeah, you'll get the score and the advantage, but you really don't know what the players are doing.
No.
Because really, all they're doing is just moving a ball back and forth.
You know that somebody once said that the definition of endless love was Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder playing tennis.
I hadn't heard that, but I can believe it.
All right, then.
I'll check with you next time.
Very nice to hear from you.
Great.
Goodbye.
Bye.
There we go. That's Michael Killian. And he's been in much better shape since he stopped giving me a hard time about grammar. Hello there.
Hello there, this is Paul.
Paul, how's it going, man?
That's going okay, man. We just finished off going to a convention this weekend. We went over to the Southwestern Division Conference.
Wow.
Radio operators.
Hey, that's very good. And did they all sit there and when they were debating their resolutions and stuff, they'd say, yeah, Roger.
Somehow I can just see that. Actually, it's a little more advanced than that. The good thing about it is we have shorter conventions than the usual folks do at organizations like ACB Radio, ACB.
Yep.
The good news is we go in on, Friday night. Friday was just the starting day, and we saw our rules enforcer, Riley Hollingsworth, who works for the Federal Communications Commission, and he had some good stuff to say, basically reassuring the amateur community that we were in good standing and that, the rules were being in, you know, just basically generally telling us what's going on in Gettysburg, which is where our FCC would be there. And then, so I sat in on a talk on that. People asked various questions. A lot of them, of course, were out of his department, so he more or less had to, you know, basically redirect things, just like, you know, anything else. And then Saturday was vendor day. I got to go check out all the various vendors, the various products. And I have to tell you, one of the things as being pretty, might as well just call me blind because I virtually can't hardly see anything. And I had my friend Monty with me. He's the one who did the review of Total Recorders. Like he's sitting over there on the computer listening to me.
Right.
In any event, the thing we found to be the most difficult is to walk through the exhibit hall and know what we were looking at.
Yeah.
So you found yourself listening for clues, conversations with various vendors going on. And you had to sort of try to figure out what the booth was. I mean, you could figure out the obvious because if you went to a radio booth where the, you know, like one of the major stores, and there was only two major stores there, the ham, what they call Ham Radio Outlet and John's Radio from Los Angeles. And so you could kind of figure those two out, but if you wanted to see some of the more interest, you know, antennas and various other things that are of interest to amateurs, then, of course, you would go, say, to a table and have to, you know, sort of check out and see what it was up. I got some great brochures, got to talk to some good people, so that was kind of neat. Of course, went to a couple of talks. One of them was internet-related, the Internet Radio Linking Project. You guys have talked about Echolink on
yep.
Main Menu and also talked about iLink at some point. But there's also a Linux-based radio-to-radio internet linking project called IRLP, which I'm actively helping actual sighted folks put up their own nodes. Make sure I'm not dropping out there. So in any event, that's what we kind of did. And so it was sort of a fun-filled Saturday, Friday and Saturday. So for once, I was actually out of the house doing something interesting. So it was kind of a fun time.
Wow.
The banquet.
That sounds really good. You know, I mean, QSY and 73s and 88s. And now, you know, what sort of future has ham radio got? Because I kind of wonder what people are doing using it now when internet-based communications are so available.
Okay, well, here's where we basically are at ham radio. First of all, I think I should clarify the 73s, the 88s, QSY, and QRT and stuff. Those are more or less CW terms. And for your VHF, UHF operator, which is the type of fidelity, where you have, like, what you're listening to on the stream, for your internet listener, you know, audio that you don't have to strain your ear to listen to. Normally, if you're using the VHF, UHF bands, you don't really need to use that type of lingo, if you will, because it's not, you know, some of the terms aren't even used correctly. They're CW. They're meant to be sent in CW. Now, as far as the amateur radio community is concerned, we have seen a drop in activity on our local repeaters, our, you know, repeater stations, which is basically a community where folks can get on, and it's like there's a radio up on a mountaintop where basically it covers a large, wide area where folks can basically talk into it with their HTs and what have you. So it's like a little community, kind of a chat room for ham radio. One person talks, they unkey, the next person talks, unkeys. That's just sort of a background for those who were not familiar with what a repeater was. Basically,
right.
It takes and interprets the signals of people that are sitting there with their HTs and mobile radios. I think we're doing pretty good. We've got the digital modes. We've got the, you know, PSK31, which has helped out HF a lot. And the benefit of that is when you start using digital modes and things like that, the signal actually gets further than on voice. You'll be able to travel. You don't need as much signal to get the message out. As far as our public service, when the cell phone networks get overloaded and things happen, the amateur radio service is what basically people fall on to get the emergency communications passed. There are places I know of, and here, even here in my area, where cell phones are a great thing, but when you start heading over into the mountains, like toward, you know, out of town, your phone probably won't be able to pick up very well. You'll drop out. But amateur radio, with all this technology we've got, with the Internet Radio Linking Project and with Echolink, as it's now been, they basically took over where iLink left off, with the Internet Linking capabilities that we've got, and with, of course, the small design of the HTs, I think that it's still alive and well, but you really have to have an interest in it. It's got to be something that you really might want to do, you know, to study up for. It's very easy to get the license. It's not very challenging, but I think for those that are interested, there's still a long way. There's still a lot that can be accomplished, even with all the Internet. And I think with our linking through the Internet, it's sort of helping to keep people interested in amateur radio.
So to get to a particular group of frequencies, do you still have to do Morse code in the U.S.?
Well, actually, they've slimmed it down. The requirement on all levels now, it used to be 5 words per minute for your novice, 13 words a minute for general, which was a higher class license, and the extra, because remember you had novice, technician, technician plus, general, advanced, which was more theory, and extra, where the major places where you had to know the code were general and extra. Now, of course, as we both know, our government is, I mean, you've probably observed from the outside, our government has been trying to cut costs on, you know, streamlining the amateur radio service a little bit, because it's a lot to administer all that sort of thing. So in an effort to get more people back into the hobby, in an effort to stimulate growth and to kind of help streamline the process, they have slimmed it down to three classes of license. The novice ticket is no longer available, as in, you know, if you're a novice now, you still got it, you can renew it. But it is something that's available. But you have the technician, general, and extra. And the top speed for with code is 5 words per minute.
Wow.
So if you basically, if you can get 5 words a minute and you can study the theory, you can become an extra class operator and have access to the band. But with, of course, the simplifying of things, the theories obviously might have gotten a little bit harder. But it is all multiple choice. So if, you know, you sit down with a Gordon West book, and in fact, I got to shake his hand yesterday. He walked me into the banquet hall area. Gordon West is an amateur radio operator who publishes publications on cassette and in Radio Shack stores for folks to get their license. He's publishing, it's one of the easier to understand books if one was interested in getting a license. So it's kind of neat. And so they've made it simpler for more folks to get on the air. The radios have certainly dropped in price.
It is interesting. And a lot of blind people are still doing it. And we had a show that was very short-lived, unfortunately, on mainstream that Kelly Superger was doing, called The Radio Show, where he used to get one of the sort of networked amateur radio news bulletins and then try and add some content. So if you and or Monty would like to pick up that project, we would love to have a regular weekly ham radio show on ACB Radio Mainstream, because a lot of blind people are very interested in it.
Yeah, I'll have to get in touch with you about that, because actually, for those that are interested, there's a lot. Actually, I have something to expand on that. The news line is still pretty interesting.
Yep.
But there is actually a blind gentleman. His name is Hap Holly.
Oh, yeah, we know Hap well.
Very well.
Yep.
And Hap Holly produces something called the Rain Report.
Yes.
The Rain Report, basically, he goes to Dayton, which is the Mecca of amateur radio, and there might be a few blind folks that may actually venture out to Dayton, but he goes to Dayton every single year. And yes, I emailed Hap just the other day. He produces a segment called The Rain Report, which features excerpts from the Dayton Hamvention. It's similar to your program that you present on mainstream, except he doesn't get to stream it. He gets to record all the excerpts where people come and talk about various facets of amateur radio.
Cool.
You've got one guy coming and talking about FCC. You might have another guy talking about Skywarn. And I think, honestly, to be well-rounded, I think it would be good if we did the main menu program. I'm sorry, if the program that was to come to ACB Radio, if I was able to get permission from Hap to broadcast the Rain Report, combined with maybe perhaps ARRL audio news, and perhaps maybe if we could try to get some local content from some other amateurs, let it sort of grow a little bit. I used to take, when I was on one of our club repeaters, our communities, if you will, I used to take about an hour of a week of time to play just Newsline and the ARRL audio news, and we would talk about things coming up. Of course, this was a locally based net. So in any event, yeah, you'll have to keep me posted as to what's up on that, because the only thing stopping me is I just need to get permission from Hap Holly to air the report.
Well, go for it. I mean, you know, because we'd love to get that on the air. And I better move on, because I've got a few people waiting in the queue for a long time. But that's a very interesting poll. I mean, I'll try it again. Very interesting call. And I appreciate you giving us a call with it.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Have a good night.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye now. That's very interesting, isn't it? The old amateur radio gig. Let's go to this call. Hello there.
Hello, Jonathan. James here in Denver, the Mile High City. Got it. Good on you. How are you, mate?
Oh, well, good on you. I'm good. I'm very well indeed, thanks. Yes.
I was listening to the discussion on the whole thing with Winamp.
Yeah.
And the other day, I think it was somebody from the Winamp for the Blind list, or it might have been PC Audio. Chris wrote a letter, and he got a response back from a gentleman at NULSIV, Steve, I forget his last name.
Yep, that's right. I saw that.
And apparently they said that's something that, you know, they're taking it seriously, and I guess they're going to address the issue.
Yeah. You see, it's just so much more difficult, I would have thought, to retrofit this sort of software for accessibility. Why these guys from A1 absolutely beats me.
Oh, I agree. Well, and the same thing with Real One. They've been saying they were going to fix that for months, and nobody's heard.
That's right. I believe it is happening, but it's slow progress. And that's my point, really, that it is very hard to retrofit it, especially the way they're doing it. I think they're using active accessibility to get the job done.
Right. Well, the weather here, since Michael was talking about the weather
yes.
where he is, the weather here was about 95, which is fairly unusual for Denver because we're sort of up in altitude, of course, in the mountains. And we've had a terrible summer. We're in the middle of just a horrendous drought. We've had a lot of forest fires and stuff. And so they're wondering how our winter is going to be, although they're saying that we may get a lot more moisture now because of El Nino, which is a thing where the waters in the Pacific are warmed, and then it causes a lot more rain and snow in certain parts of the country. So it'll be interesting. But,
personally, I blame the ozone layer.
Yeah, well, that's part of it too.
Yeah, you know, I did spend a very short amount of time in your airport. When I was either coming or going to the convention. Yeah, and it was very nice. Everybody was lovely there.
Did you get a chance to have a beer while you were waiting?
No, I didn't. No.
I have not yet downloaded the JAWS beta. As you mentioned earlier, they do have a second one out. I'm sort of copying what everybody has to say on the JAWS list in terms of the bugs, but... It seems like they've taken care of quite a few of the problems. I guess the final release is supposed to be sometime in September.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. They are responding quite well, I think, in this cycle to bug reports. I've seen a few pretty major ones squashed.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that they came out, I guess, with a second version. I mean, just a week after they put the first one up, so they're really moving right along.
Yeah, they're doing well. And I was quite interested in Lee Hamilton's comments on Main Menu a couple of weeks back, where he said that they are actually employing people who are doing nothing but squashing bugs now.
Right, right.
So that's encouraging.
Well, listen, I just wanted to pop in briefly and say, good day, and let you know that we're listening out here, or at least I'm listening out here in Denver, and I know you probably have some other calls, so I'll keep it brief, but just wanted to pop in and say good evening.
Hey, thanks, James. Always good to hear from you, and good to get your call.
All right, take care, John.
Okay, bye now. And area code 559, sorry you've had a very long wait.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi there, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. By the way, yes, indeed, we enjoyed hearing... Amanda, the baby, the placenta, the whole nine yards.
Yuck. Yeah, well.
Oh, yeah, we were picking it all. I'm in the other room going, oh, there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, Dave was in the other room so that he could, that he could avoid the, on the porch, I guess, so he could avoid the competition with the radio. And,
yeah.
I was, we were both, you know, really excited to hear that because, as he says, it wasn't so long ago that we were experiencing the same thing ourselves.
It's something incredibly special to be able to hear that.
It really is. It really is. Of course, the phone didn't do it justice, but that's understandable.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise on that thing.
Yeah. Interesting. What I was going to say, first off, well, Winamp, actually Internet Radio, I haven't thought yet about going into Winamp 3 from what's been said. I think I'll wait a while on that. But I hope everybody has or is sending in their letters or their faxes to their senators and congressmen, because, boy, I don't want to see us lose. I don't even know whether Congress is in session still or not, but, boy, I went ahead and sent mine in, and a couple of other friends who don't have, who can't do forms. I went ahead and did, sent in the click, clicked the fax button on the internet, on the SaveInternet.org site.
It is really important that people take the time to do that, to support the Internet Radio Fairness Act, and that they go to www.saveinternetradio.org and complete that form, because if they don't, I mean, it's a bit like what happened when people didn't bother to turn up and vote in your last election. And then everybody complains about how close it was, and it was close probably because a lot of people who should have voted didn't bother.
And if you don't know, they want that four-digit extra zip code number that no one uses. But you will be taken, if you need to a link to the post office, and you can get that. So that's even taken care of.
Is that a new thing in America, this extra four digits?
Golly, what, 5 years now?
Right, okay.
I don't know how long. I hardly ever use it. I don't know.
Why'd they do that?
3 years, maybe. Well, maybe four or five, but sometimes you need it, and here there is a definite place where you need to fill that in, probably to authenticate your residence and your district. The idea is, as I understand it, it's rather like the apartment number of a building. Make sure that you... that your letter is going to or coming from the exact address. The way we used to talk about the internet addresses, HTTP, the URL, the link, all the way down to the actual link to the various sites. That's kind of what this is.
So how what's the word I'm looking for? When you see these four digits... what does it delineate? I mean,
it delineates that in all the zip codes, for example, all the addresses that are in zip code 6641. We're the only one that has 6641.
Oh, I see. Gosh,
that
so
is our house. It's like apartment 5.
Oh, so every house has
one. And I know this for sure because I looked at there were two people I were filling them out for. And they were in the same apartment building, or a complex, each with a different apartment, each with a different number, each with a different plus four.
Heavy. That's
so
amazing.
I was interested to see that, too. As I said, I haven't paid much attention to it myself.
Gosh.
That's some good news. My laptop, I got a call after having said that they may be backed up 5 weeks. My laptop is going to be coming in sometime Thursday or before. Maybe I told you that in an email. But
yeah, I think you did. And you're going to love that when you get up and running because...
Oh, I bet it is.
If the next thing,
now,
if you can...
we've decided we're going to my aunt's 80th birthday celebration in Virginia, so I may have to call United Parcel and see what happens. If it doesn't get here by Thursday, they may have to hold it.
Oh, gosh. Well, if you can manage it, if you can get one of those new... wireless services from Verizon and companies like that, you'll be able to cruise around with your laptop and listen to ACB radio everywhere.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Now that, I'll have to, because our particular, I'm not sure that our particular company, we have AT&T Wireless. I don't know if we would have the capabilities there or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I think AT&T are doing it. Yeah, but I don't know how much they charge. These things, it's...
And I don't know whether our phones would handle it. Would that have to be interfaced?
What was that?
Would our phones have to be...
Well, what I would do, and this is what I did do when I got this facility, is I just bought a card that goes right into the PCMCIA slot, so it's completely independent of your phone. This card has its own phone number and everything. Yeah, it is neat. You can receive faxes on it, and I actually sat in the back of a taxi a couple of weeks ago listening to ACB Radio Interactive Broadband Stream cruising around the busy traffic of Auckland.
That was fascinating. I heard you telling us.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go, but I also wanted to say in response to the discussion of ham radio, in fact, it was... your friend Gerald and Dave were, in fact, speaking over Echolink. And it is I think the two hobbies are complementing each other.
Hmm.
There's a place for both. I know we've got a few hams who are scared that the computer and the Internet will be the death of hamdom. But I really think that when push comes to shove, and even just in general usage, the two... services or hobbies or ham radio is technically a service. The two of them can complement each other very nicely, and I think a lot is being done, could be done with with both of those applications.
Well, I really hope that we can get somebody to do a regular ham radio show, and even shortwave listening included as well, on mainstream, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people interested in it. And the DX programs are getting few and far between now.
That's for sure. They certainly are.
Yeah. Well, lovely to hear from you, and have a lovely time at your aunt's party.
Say again?
Have a lovely time at your aunt's birthday party.
Oh, we will. Yes. And we'll be there through my birthday.
Cool. Well, have a good birthday.
August the 27th.
Marvelous.
So we're going to stay through and go back on Wednesday. So that'll be a nice, unexpected trip.
Well, enjoy yourself.
Oh, we will.
All right.
Bye.
See you later.
Thanks.
Bye now. This is Blind Line, and we say hello to area code 802.
Hello, Jonathan. It's Chris Reagan here.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. I know it's been a while since I've contacted you, but I figured I'd call and say hello and all that.
Very good.
I wanted to kind of mention, although I didn't get a chance, for Winamp, Chris Garstead emailed the tech person over there, and they said, well, we're working on it.
Yeah, I saw that email. Yeah, well, we'll have to. I really hope that they can come on main menu and just talk us through.
So do I. And I'm hoping that, I mean, not to say that Winamp 2X is going to be going out the window, because I don't think it will be that soon. But when it does, hopefully they have. Winamp 3 will be accessible enough for us to use, you know?
Yeah, and the good thing is that Winamp 2 does offer pretty much all that we need at the moment, I suppose. It's a very fully featured player with all kinds of great plugins and things. But version 3, I imagine, when they get the shoutcasting tools out for it, we'll be able to stream in Vorbis, and I think that that's something that many people will be wanting.
Yeah. Well, another thing I wanted to kind of touch base about was bills, cable bills in the United States. I don't know how you guys do the TV thing over there in New Zealand.
Right.
Apparently, I've been trying to get my cable bill in Braille, and unfortunately, it hasn't been working out too well. So I went to the FCC, and they said, well, here's the thing. If the cable company isn't a telephone company, maybe we can do something as far as getting the telephone bill in Braille, but not the cable bill.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it's a real pain in the neck, and I'm sure any other person who's probably listening to this is on Adelphia PowerLink, and which is the internet access, and the cable, and use the cable television, things like that. And I just don't know what the deal is with that. I just have no clue. You know?
Yeah, and cable service in general can be a bit of a hassle, because with the way that that industry has video recorders and shift the programs around and skip past the commercials, and then you have these on-screen programming guides or the pay-for-view movies. And,
yeah, and they're not accessible.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact, because I know a person who works for the company, and he says, basically that they don't have DVS services on their cable boxes like they should.
Mm.
And that's kind of strange. I thought the FCC mandated that they were supposed to.
I'm interested in this because we've been lobbying in this country for DVS, or rather audio description, because DVS is a particular kind of audio description. But and I know, for example, that, as I understand it, Turner Classic Movies does have quite a bit of audio description, and it always has, even before the FCC regulation was passed. But when we get Turner Classic Movies here, even though our provider does have the facility for the extra audio, we don't get the extra audio. And I'm quite interested in whether that's because it's fed out on the satellite in a particular way that doesn't include that audio, or what the story is.
Well, I know the televisions have to have the big ones with the stereo sound, or the TV VCR combos.
Yeah.
In order to have it, and I don't know if that's the case, if people have to have that. I think they do.
Yeah, but if it's obviously, if it's not actually contained in the data stream, in the feed mm-hmm. that they get, then, you know, then it breaks that as well. And that's what we're getting
and
here.
You can't turn on, and the SAP channel basically won't help at all.
That's right.
Then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
Cheers.
Strange. But yeah, I figured I'd bring up those two points. I mean, it's just a real pain in the neck that you can't even read your own bills, for one thing.
It is.
From the cable company. I mean, you can put them on the scanner, but some bills they just don't like to come out well with the scanner.
Would you be happy if they could email the bill to you?
Yeah, that too. Email or Braille.
Right. Because they should be able to do that, surely.
Mm-hmm. Because I know Verizon does it.
Yeah. So have you tried asking them, well, hey, if you can't Braille it for me, can you email it?
Yes.
What do they say?
They said they get on it and, I mean, it takes a while, but I call back and I ask them what the progress is, and they say, well, we haven't really started on it yet.
Yeah.
And things like that. But the thing about it is if they had it in the beginning, probably wouldn't be doing this right now.
I think that with these situations, you've really got to get past the customer service people who are essentially, you know, very nice, well-trained
yeah.
call center operators who
yeah.
can, you know, say, you know, maybe your cable box isn't working because you haven't plugged it in at the wall, sir, or something.
Oh,
but,
God.
When it gets
that.
To policy stuff, you've got to get past those guys and get to a management person who's actually responsible for making the decision. And sometimes you have to press pretty hard to get past those frontline people.
And, you know, they don't let you speak to the manager.
No, that you've got to try hard.
They don't let you speak to the manager. They go and they talk to the manager, and you never know what the manager's going to say.
No, I agree. You got to insist, man. You be an assertive American.
Yes.
Yeah. Americans know better than any other group of people in the world how to demand their rights. So demand
mm-hmm.
them.
That's for sure.
Hey, have a good night. I really appreciate you calling in, and
hey,
I wish
no
you
problem.
Luck. If you have some luck, let us know.
Hey, I just might.
Cool.
Okay.
See you later.
All right, nice talking to you.
Thanks, you too. Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
This is Blind Line and area code 815. Hi there. Oh, he's hanging up. Oh, here we go. Hello?
Jonathan.
Area code 815, hi.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hello there. Hey, what are you doing on area code?
How are
you? What are you doing on area code 815?
I don't know what happened here, man. Probably, I hope nothing's happened here, man.
What provider are you calling on?
I'm using my Yabba card through Telecom.
Hey, and you know what? You've come up
what?
As... Hang on. Oh, no, I haven't got area code 815. I'm very sorry to 815, because you were supposed to be next, and I've obviously hit the wrong button. But how are you anyway?
Good, man.
Good.
This previous call talking about bills. I get my Telecom bills through email now.
Yeah, that's right.
Subscribe to Telecom online, bill online through Telecom.
Yes, it's a good service. Although they should be jolly well doing them in Braille as well. But the email bill is you get notified that the bill's there, and then you can go and inspect it all on the website. And at least they're not using PDF files or anything. It's all there on the website.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about the described audio. It's good that Sky have these extra audio channels now. But the other thing is, how would you get the movie channel and the audio channel on at the same time?
Well, in the feed that you can get from, say, Turner Classic Movies, they send you a feed that's encoded so that one channel of audio is the regular channel, and then there's a button that you can press on the decoder that turns on the additional track. It's exactly what they do for Maori commentaries of the rugby league.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of commentaries of New Zealand Maori games.
Yeah.
When there was a match being played, I think it was in Australia, and they had an English feed and a Maori one.
That's right. So, and when you turn on, so instead of turning on the Maori track, you would turn that track on, and you'd get the regular movies you always do, but it would also have audio description in it.
Okay, well, I better let you get to this other call before time runs out.
Yes. All right, well, nice to hear from you. How much does a Yabba card cost to use?
It costs me 30 cents per minute.
Oh, okay. I just got a new deal with a provider in New Zealand we're using for the first time today, and they'll give me 15 cents a minute any time of the day to the US.
Is that through iHeart?
No, it's called NetTel.
NetTel?
Yeah, co.nz. You'll love it.
Okay, I'll check it out, man.
Good on you. See you later.
Good afternoon.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Area code 815, I'm very sorry to keep you waiting. How are you?
That's okay, Jonathan. It's me, the Toonhead. How you doing?
Oh, lovely, lovely. Yeah, nice to hear from you. Second week in a row.
Yeah. Everybody was talking that, everybody was mentioning that I was on there, so I felt like I should call in and take a couple of minutes of your time there.
Good on you.
But, you know, hey, everybody, and that's, you know, you're talking about getting a hold of these customer service guys, and that's why I went to, you know, Steve from Nullsoft, because I had talked to him before, and I felt like I could get, you know, a better response from a human being rather than filling out these silly feedback forms.
Because yeah.
A lot of these people on the Winamp list and the PC audio list and all these other lists were sending in their comments, and they kept getting back these really cold and impersonal, you know, feedback, and like, thank you for your time, and it was just, basically it was just one of those really cold and impersonal robotic messages. So that's why I emailed Steve, and actually he emailed me within a couple hours.
Yes.
So I guess the guy really checks his email really fast. So that was nice to get that. And it was really, you know, like, because you saw it, of course, I forwarded it to you. And he was, I mean, he was very nice about it. So hopefully we'll just have to have some hope, I guess.
Well, yeah. You know? But, I mean, I still think that we need to find out why they obviously chose to put out an inaccessible product from day one, because you would think that after the whole AOL software debacle, that AOL in general would have some sort of corporate policy. And also Netscape, which is now owned by AOL, has active accessibility all through it, finally. So I think that somehow AOL needs to have, at a very corporate level, software design guidelines that simply say it's unacceptable for our company to release inaccessible software.
And get some kind of some sort of guy in there who is in charge of that, you know, like some kind of like what Steve would do, because Steve is the product manager for WAM 3 himself.
Right.
I mean, I remember that, you know, he had that position, so I felt like I should email him and let him know personally. So
yes.
Hey, maybe if the AOL guys can get another software manager guy in there to do that, maybe we can, you know, hopefully get a better accessible version, and, you know, maybe the next update we can have a better idea of what's going on, and maybe we can have access to, you know, maybe the other windows, because I can't even get into the other windows like I was telling you before, and nobody else can.
Well, so, I think that although it's frustrating to get those canned responses, you can be sure that when people do write to support at winamp.com, they do get logged, and so it's really important that every blind person who is annoyed that they can't upgrade to Winamp 3 do take the time to write.
That's what I was telling everybody on the Winamp list, because I do think it's important for everybody to at least say something, because if you don't say something, then you can't complain if they don't do what you want later on.
Exactly.
So that's why I said that. So, anyways, well, I'll let you go, man, but I wanted to call in because everybody was mentioning me, and I felt like I should let everybody know that, yes, this really did happen, and, you know, this guy really is listening to us. He says he's listening to us. I hope he is.
Yeah, let's hope so, too.
Yeah, so, anyways, well, I'll let you go, man.
Have a good evening.
You too, man.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
That's Chris Karstad, and that's where we wrap it up after a very slow start. We had a fast-paced and interesting program, so I appreciate people calling in, ultimately. And quite an amazing thing, hearing the baby's heartbeat, too, live and worldwide on Blind Line, where you just never know what's going to happen, do you? Catch you back next week. We'll look forward to it. Don't forget, more stimulating talk tomorrow night. John Wiedlick and the Snowman will be in. Thanks to the Snowman for filling in for me. And then after that, of course, Phil Part and Friends, along with that amazing Handyman show. And I'll be back on Wednesday for Main Menu. Cheers.
For the latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.